This is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, class number 4, 2009, Kartik. Concluding last few several verses of the Sadhana Bhakti chapter. We heard about the Panchanga Bhakti, living in a holy place, chanting the holy name, serving the deity, associating with devotees, and hearing the Bhagavatam. And he said, yesterday we heard how any one of these limbs can very quickly bring one manifest the state of Bhav, and one will realize and perceive Krishna at the same time. And this verse is Eastern Division, chapter 2, verse 245. Kesham chit kuchit anganam yat shudram shriyate phalam pahir mukta paritya itat kintu mukyam phalam riti. Rupa Goswami Pad said, in some of the verses quoted from the scriptures in this book, there's many verses quoted from Padma Puran, Skanda Puran, etc. In some of these verses, material results are attributed to the angas of bhakti for attracting persons possessing material consciousness. However, the main result of all these angas is bhav. So sadhana bhakti leads to bhava bhakti. Bhava bhakti, when it becomes condensed, it's prema. Prema bhakti. So all of these things, living in the holy place, serving the deity, revealing your mind, all the different aspects of devotion, the whole intention, the whole purpose of all these things we're doing is, of course, to develop love of God, bhava and prema. But one may question when he reads Nectar Devotion, if anyone comes before the Lord, he'll get and offers prayers, and he gets free from samsara. There's so many benedictions are given. And one might say, well, what does that have to do with love of Godhead? And Rupa Goswami is saying that this is the acharyas and the rishis, mahajans, and they reveal these verses and scriptures, and they give these benedictions to encourage people, materialistic, pious, religious, pious people. They're religious, but they're fruitive. We call karma mishra bhakta. They're devotees or they're Vaishnavas, but they're interested in something material. So to induce them, then the Lord gives some benedictions and boons. But the real main result is bhava. And that's all we want out of anything we do. Any devotional activity we engage in, we only desire love of God. And we engage in those activities only to please God. Because love is all about pleasing the beloved. Because Krishna says he maintains, if someone, whatever you need, he provides, whatever you lack, he gives. So we're confident in that. What do we basically need? Food, shelter, water, clothing, engagement. So all that is provided. And Jiva Goswami has some commentary. This is from Bhagavatam. And the gist of Jiva Goswami's commentary is that the Lord will fulfill desires. Materialistic people may engage in bhakti with motivation, although it should be unmotivated, but they may have motivations. And Krishna will fulfill their desires, but he does it in a very clever way. He fulfills their desires, but at the same time, they lose their taste to ask for more things or demand more things. They get something. Generally, a materialistic person, if his desire is fulfilled or he attains what he wants materially, then he immediately generates another desire and another ambition. Oh, I got this, now I want that. Oh, I got a car, now I want a boat. I got a boat, now I want a plane. Whatever. And it goes on more and more and more. Well, so someone may be religious or pious and they worship God and they say, oh, if I do this, if I observe Chaturmasya, I may be a singer. Say I'm a singer in a rock and roll band. And it says if you observe Chaturmasya and you don't eat any salt for 4 months, then you'll get a sweet voice. So if my voice is sweeter, I'll sell more records, become more popular. So then with that idea, which is material motivation, he may do that. So then he gets that sweet voice and he sells more records, becomes more famous, makes more money, but at the same time, there's a dawning of spiritual enlightenment. Krishna gives him a higher idea. He thinks, maybe I should sing for God. Maybe I should write a song about God, or even a whole album dedicated to God. He sings, "My sweet Lord." He sings about Krishna. And so this is, Krishna tricks him. So there's a verse like that in Bhagavatam 2.3.10. Satyam dishat yartitam artitam rinam naivartato yat punar artital yata swayam vidate bhajatam anichatam echapidanam nijapada palavam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead fulfills the material desires of a devotee who approaches him with such motives. But he does not bestow benedictions upon the devotee that will cause him to demand more benedictions again. Oh, Daddy, give me this. And then Daddy gives you that. And then Daddy says, you want more things? No, that's all right. That's enough. So this is the loving play of the Lord. However, the Lord willingly gives the devotee shelter at his own lotus feet, even though such a person does not aspire for it. And that shelter satisfies all his desires. That is the special mercy of the Lord. Ichapidanam nijapadapalavam. Beautiful Sanskrit. 2.3.10 Bhagavatam. Ichapidanam nijapadapalavam. Swayam vidatte bhajatam anichatam. You want so many things. We pray to the Lord. We endeavor. We perform some tapa, penance, austerity, Harivasra, Ekadasi, Chaturmasya, and Lord maybe fulfills immediately, and then he gives his shelter. We're not even asking for a shelter, but he gives his shelter. He says, listen, you wrestle, come here, get under my feet. Hey, what am I doing under here? Hey, this is nice. He says, okay, now, what now? No, I didn't realize it's quite nice under the shelter of your lotus feet. I really don't need anything else. I don't want anything else. Kamam chadasye natu kama kamyaya yatottama shloka janashraya urati. Indeed, Maharaj Ambarish never desired anything for his own sense gratification. He engaged all his senses in devotional service and various engagements related to the Lord. This is the way to increase attachment for the Lord and be completely free from all the material desires. He was too busy, Ambarish Maharaj was too busy serving the Lord to think about material activities. Prabhupada often said that devotees should be so busy in Krishna consciousness they don't have time for Maya. Maya's there. I mean, the classic example is Haridas Thakur. Maya came and said, look, I'm at your doorstep, presenting so many feminine attractions and alluring postures and enticing words of gratification and glorification. Oh, you're so strong. You're so this, that. And Haridas says, yeah, it looks good. Nice proposal. I like the package. Your words are charming. Your face is sweet. But just, can you hold? Put it on hold? Can you put it on hibernation mode? I'm a little busy right now. I just have a few more rounds of chant. And a few more, and a few more, and a few more, and a few more. And the whole night passes that way. And she says, all right, already. The sun's shining. I have to go now. So in this way, he was just too busy for Maya. But when it came to Vishwamitra Muni, he wasn't busy in Krishna's service. He was simply controlling his mind by rigid austerities. Or Shobhari Rishi. He wasn't engaging in Krishna's service. He was just doing tapa, developing his own inner powers of sense control and meditation. And then he lost it when the allurements came. Text 246. Sammatam bhakti vijnanam bhakti yangatvam nakarmanam. Rupa Goswami says here, the consensus of those knowledgeable of bhakti is that karma, which includes the duties or activities of varna and ashram, is not a limb of bhakti. So this is another way of saying that bhakti, the bhakti anga, 64 limbs of devotion, are completely transcendental. They're alaukik. They have nothing to do with this world or this society or this whatever your social position or spiritual ashram is. Bhakti is a transcendental phenomenon that immediately and directly connects one with transcendence. whereas the activities in Varnashram are materially rooted, and they are material activities which point you in and move you in a direction of transcendence. But of themselves, they are not transcendental, the activities of Varnashram. Gauranga, 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 Gauranga. Text 247. This is from the 11th canto, chapter 20, verse 9. Of course, this is Lord Krishna's teachings to Uddhava. Uddhava Gita. There's quite a few more verses. Oh, there's another 30 verses, and then he begins Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti. Tavat karmani kurvita na nirvidyeta yavata matkata shavanado va shraddha yavan na jayate. Bhagavan Sri Krishna said, one should continue to perform the daily and periodic activities of Varnashram until one actually becomes detached from material sense gratification and develops faith for hearing and chanting about me. Varnashram Dharma is a springboard to bhakti, can be, at least, although it may not be also. If it brings one to the platform of faith in God and conviction, and he becomes gradually detached from sense gratification, then he becomes eligible to take up bhakti. Bhogaishwarya prasaktanam taya parthijateshasam. If someone has too much attached, asakti, bhogaishwarya prasakti, prasakta, asakti, too much attached to material enjoyment, bhogaishwarya and opulence, and he can't take up bhakti. So the duties of Varnashram Dharma are gradually meant to liberate one. That's why it says Dharma, Art, Kam, Moksha. So liberation has many levels of this concept of Moksha, Mukti. Dharma, religious activities, the duties of Varnashram, and by performing those activities within duty, within Varna and Ashram, one gets sufficient happiness and gratification and fulfillment of sense desires, Kam. This is Art and Kam. And then, this is the blessings of the Vedas and the blessings of the Devas and the Paramatma, that by following the Vedic path or the Vedic way, one gradually becomes detached. That's the whole idea. The whole idea of the Varnashram culture is to bring one to the platform of Mukti. But Mukti begins with detachment. Vairagya, Nijabhakti Yoga, Vairagya Vidya, Nijabhakti Yoga, Shikshartam, Ekam, whatever it is. Shavirade. There's a verse that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya glorifies Lord Chaitanya. He said, he's come, Shikshartam. He's come to teach this most valuable thing, this transcendental knowledge and detachment. So this is the background of bhakti. The background of bhakti is Vigyan and Vairagya. Double V. VV. Vigyan, realized knowledge. Aham Brahmasmi. Let me serve Krishna. Vairagya, I mean, this is vijnan, realization, and detachment. When one becomes a devotee, one contacts the bhakti principle or the bhakti shakti, automatically knowledge and detachment come to him, which is the supreme fruit of Varnashram Dharma, knowledge of our spiritual identity and some basic detachment. That's automatic in bhakti. And Jiva Goswami gives a long purport about these points I mentioned. Because Varnashram Dharma was something big 500 years ago. Now it's like non-existent. No one could imagine. I don't think Jiva Rupa Goswami could imagine such a degradation of culture in such a short time. Varnashram Dharma was intact in India, up and running for thousands of years. All throughout Dwapar Yuga, Treta Yuga, most of Kali Yuga. But in the 500 years that have passed since the writing of this book, the sewer people and the stool collectors are running the country. Bungies and chamras who sweep the stool from the gutters become chief ministers, which means emperors and kings, isn't it? They can't read or write. They can tell some good jokes in front of the camera. Balu, what's his name? Balu or something? Balu means bear, no? Balu? the big Balu. They tell some good jokes and walk off. And the biggest joke is that they walk off with 2,000 crores of the taxpayers' money and put it in the Swiss bank. The guy doesn't know how to write or read. That's I don't think Rupa Goswami and Jiva could imagine such a thing in India. So it's kind of irrelevant, all this discussion. This Chanare Krishna take prasadam and all the best. Janmana jayate shudro. The pranas say janmana jayate shudro. By birth, only by the virtue of birth, everyone's basically a shudra. Text 248. It's interesting, it's the flow of the dialogue, Rupa Goswami saying. Jnana vairagya yor bhakti pravesha yo payogita. Ishat pratamam eveti nangatvam uchitam tayo. Jnana and vairagya are suitable for entering bhakti, being somewhat useful in the beginning of bhakti, but they are not considered angas of bhakti. Sometimes devotees get so hung up on the vairagya thing, because a lot of devotees in their last life, whether they're male or female gender in this life, in their last life they were yoginis and yogis, and they would frequent the mountains and secluded recesses of the Himalayas, engaging in rigorous austerities and standing on one leg and eating chickpeas and drinking freezing cold water. Then they take birth in Zurich, mountainous region, or they take place in Russia or somewhere, become a Hare Krishna due to their good karma or whatever, karma fall. They get running water in the toilet. It's considered civilized. The United Nations does surveys that determine what is a civilized country, and it's considered if you have running water in your house and a toilet in your house, that you're actually very civilized. If you go out to the field and pass and wash your hands in a river, you're considered primitive. It's very interesting. If you have a stool pot in your house, you're considered very advanced and cultured. This is the United Nations standard. So Jnana and Vairagya, they're suitable for entering bhakti. They're useful, but they're not considered angas. Now the point I was making is that sometimes devotees have a natural proclivity for tapasya. They like 40-day grape juice fasts and these kind of rigorous self-denials and abstention from foods and fruitarian diets and crash courses and weight loss and whatnot. When I was in Los Angeles in 75, devotees, they stopped coming to the prasadam hall to take Krishna prasad. And they had a little group, and they're called a sprout group. And they were all sprouting up and making sprouts and juices. And so then there was some kind of turmoil in the temple community that they were going sprout. And they were avoiding Krishna prasadam. And Prabhupada, they had a discussion, like a showdown, so to speak. Temple president, and that was the whole thing. And so Prabhupada was there at the time. I was there also. And Prabhupada said, "What is the issue?" And the temple president said, "Prabhupada, they say they don't like the temple prasadam. They want to eat healthy prasadam. They want to eat health food." And Prabhupada said, "What is wrong? I'm eating this prasadam. I am eating this food. I don't find anything wrong." So well, that's the point, Prabhupada. They're not interested in prasadam. They're interested in bodybuilding and this and that. And it was like this kind of thing. He said, "What is this? They should not do like this. Waste all. This is not a bodybuilding movement. You know? I mean, take proper prasadam like this." So vairagya. So what happens? I see oftentimes devotees say, "Oh, it's chaturmasya. I'm going to eat one chickpea a day and really be austere and sleep all day and not chant any japa." Not chanting any japa, not studying any shastra, because I'm too weak, because, you know, I'm fasting, I'm only eating once a day. And they think that I'm really a big maha devotee now. Because, you know, I gave up pizza for 4 months. You know, I gave up ice cream and the MBT. That's not the point. Better you eat ice cream and stay awake and chant 64 rounds every day. This is bhakti. Abstention from sweets just because you want to lose weight in the name of Chaturmasya. This is not devotion. Oftentimes devotees asking, I'm going to do this and this and that. And they tell me all the material things they're going to do. I said, what is the spiritual program? What about your job and your study? And I know one family, every Chaturmasya, they go on a fruit diet. Of course, when it's not Chaturmasya, they go on a chuck-a-chuck diet. They had lots of puris and lots of sweets and lots of wedding parties. And all winter long, there's weddings in Delhi. So the young socialites, they just fly from one wedding to another. And every wedding, there's about 250 preparations being presented for you to eat. 250. Forget about chop and bog. You walk down these tables, and these chefs are there, and everything's hot. 250 different items, isn't it? Maybe more. 50 sabjis, 40 sweets, and you walk in, yeah, little. So if you only have 10 grams of 250 preparations, how much is that? 2.5 kilos. How big is the belly? They say the belly is 2 human hands put together. Your hands. Little hands, little belly. Big hands, big belly. So you put your two hands together, that's the size of your belly. I don't mean like this, I mean level. You put your two hands and just make a level thing. It's not like, yeah, my belly. My two hands are together, but it just goes up like Mount Meru and comes down. No, it's two hands and then level. So it says a yogi, he begs. This is what they say in Yoga Shastras. A yogi begs, oh, ma, prasad dedo. So she fills his two hands with prasad. Then he goes outside. And then he goes like this. And one hand he takes and he gives to animal or some cow or whatever. So that's 50%. So now 50% of his belly is empty because he took two hands and what was in one he distributed. Now this he eats. So this is 50% of his belly. Then 25% is air and 25% is water. This is considered the formula for health in Ayurveda. Fill half the belly with solid food and 25% air, 25% water. But we do 99.9% food. Then, little air and water an hour later. Isn't it? So this vairagya, the bhakti is a real thing. One devotee had to go to Vrindavan and do the advanced party work for Bhaktisanta Saraswati's Brajmandal Prikwa in 1933, I believe. And he was fasting, he was sannyasi during the Nirjal, and he was very weak, and he said, listen, I want you to go tomorrow. And then he said, Guru Maharaj is Ekadasi, and I'm feeling weak. He said, just eat and get on the train. Forget about your breath. He said, you're serving, and there's 1,000 devotees going to this Brikma, just you eat. You eat three times, you eat now in the mat, you pack a tiffin on the train, you eat when you get to Mathura. You eat and do service. Not grains, but you eat. Which for him was like, oh, how can I do that? Lifelong I'm doing this nirjal. So this is the thing, that bhakti is the supreme point. Why is there so much warning about this jnana vairagya? Especially, it says in the next verse, 249, Yadube chitta katinya hetu prayak satamate sukumara sabhaveimya bhaktista dhetur irita. Why is Rupa Goswami cautioning us, and he's explaining why. Oh, Rupa Goswami, why are you saying that they're somewhat suitable, but they're not really bhakti? Why am I saying that? Because jnana and vairagya generally make the heart very hard and harsh. Katin. I think it's the same as Hindi. Katin means like a thorn or hard. Katin. Katinya hetu. They're the cause of this. Chitta katinya. Yat ube chitta katinya means that they are the cause of making the chitta, the consciousness, becomes hard. We say hard-hearted. We become hard-hearted by doing austerities. The authoritative devotees, satam mate, it says, satam mate, this is the mati. This is the mati of the satam. Satam prasangam mamavirya samvito. Satam means the saints or the saintly. The givers of truth, the livers of truth, the believers of truth are called sat, satam. Mate means their consideration, their idea, their conception. Satam mate. Sukumaras sabhave yam bhaktista detarirata. Because what is the nature of bhakti? Vairagya and Gyan, they have this, their nature is like this, katinya, chitta katinya, katin. They make your consciousness hard. But what does bhakti do? Bhakti makes you sukumarya, sukumar, subhav. This is the nature of bhakti. It makes you soft, become gentle, become soft. Someone say, oh, but you know, you're a sannyasi, you're so mean, you know, you're supposed to be soft. Well, it doesn't mean soft like sentimental. I mean, soft means receptive to the impression of God. Soft means your consciousness becomes receptive to transcendental vibration. You can actually receive the holy name of the Lord in your consciousness. Because there's no blocking there. There's no block of ego and false knowledge and false austerity which creates pride and hardness. The hardness is the pride. The hardness of consciousness that comes. Chitta katinya. The consciousness becomes hard. Katin, because of pride, which is generated by accumulation of knowledge and austerity, tapabalam, power. So that hard heart becomes impenetrable for the transcendental sound vibration. And bhakti says, sukumara subhav, bhaktista datur, datu, the datu, the element. The qualitative element, or the element of bhakti, this is its nature, subhav, this is the very nature, or svabhav of bhakti, that it makes the consciousness very soft. So the holy name can take root there, it can grow there, it can, and hard ground, you put a seed in hard ground, it can't take root. The roots have nothing to hold on to because the ground is like cement. So the ground of chitta, the chitta is the ground of consciousness. The ground of consciousness becomes hard by undue austerities. Accumulation of mundane knowledge. Then the tender creeper of bhakti. Bhakti is a creeper. Bhakti latam, bhakti mool, the roots of the bhakti, they can't grab, they can't catch in that consciousness because it becomes hard by ego and pride. Bhakti's nature is very tender. It's the cause of entering into bhakti. Bhakti alone is the cause of entering into bhakti. Jiva Goswami comments, this verse, Rupa Goswami speaks of another fault in being attached to jnana and vairagya. First, the first fault is that it's not bhakti. And the second fault is it makes your heart, your consciousness hard. Jnana and vairagya cause hardness in the heart. In jnana, one must deliberate on the truth by defeating a variety of other philosophies. So defeating means challenging. Hey, listen, I defeated that guy. Like bhaktas go out and preach sometimes. How would you preach? Oh, I met this Christian, I smashed him. I met this Muslim, I defeated him. So yeah, oh, you're great. You're really great. I. Did Krishna do anything? Krishna, who's that? Krishna gave you any ability or any knowledge or any conviction or any memory or any power? Krishna? No, I did it. And vairagya, one must renounce enjoyment by repeated toleration of suffering. The very nature of these practices is harsh and unpleasant. The practices are unpleasant and harsh, and you become unpleasant and harsh by practicing them. Bhakti is sweet, and you practice sweet, you engage in a sweet process, you become sweet. Just like the sweet maker becomes fat. Because if you eat lots of sweets, what happens? You become fat. So Prabhupada explains that the man who's making sweets, just by smelling the ghee and the sugar, he becomes fat, even if he doesn't eat them. Because he's associating with those sweets. He's cooking the sweets. Of course he may eat a few on the side. But Prabhupada said this. He said he becomes fat just by smelling the cooking ghee and sugar and milk. He's associating with sweets. He becomes fat like the sweet eater. So we're associating with sweet process. Bhakti is sweet, madhur. And our Lord, we're worshipping the sweetness of the Lord. This is the opposite of the sweetness and softness of the heart. So a purified heart is sweet. A purified heart is soft. A contaminated heart is bitter. A contaminated heart is hard. Hard-hearted, bitter. But how can a person enter into higher and higher stages of bhakti without some sort of assistance, you may say? Bhakti is said to be the cause of entering bhakti, and previous acts of bhakti alone are cause of entering into higher stages of bhakti. But, the argument is given, bhakti will also cause some hardening of the heart, since perfection is reached only by effort, no pain, no gain. The answer is given, This bhakti is by nature extremely tender because it consists solely of thinking of the Lord's sweet forms, sweet qualities, and sweet pastimes. So I'm saying, the sweet maker is associating with sweets, so he becomes sweet as one who eats the sweets. So we're associating with Madhurya Purushottam. We're worshipping the sweetness in God, which I said before in classes. We're not worshipping the Vibhuti, God the Omnipotent One, God the Omniscient One, God the All-Pervading One, God the Creator, the Destroyer, the Maintainer, Sadaishvarya Purna, Aishvaryasya Samagrasya, Viryasya Yajashashriya, the All-Famous One, the All-Powerful One, the All-Learned One, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We're worshipping Krishna, the Supremely Sweet Lover, Rasaraj, Sri Krishna. We're worshipping the sweet God, the sweetness. I mean, the Sringadeva is not very sweet. Korma is not very sweet. Vraha is not very sweet. They're functional lords. They're functional. They're necessary. Dharmic lords of Dharma, lords of justice, lords of rule and order. Maryada Purushottam. Yada yada yadharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. Krishna is not the lord of anything. He's the enjoyer of everything. He's Lila Purushottam. Lila means Lilingata. And that means Prema Lingata. Alingata Lelo. He simply accepts the loving embraces of his devotees. He's just dancing. He's dancing with the coward boys. And he lets them go and dances with his mother. And he lets her go and dance with the gopis. And lets the gopis go and dances with the cows. And lets the cows dance and dances with the trees. And lets the trees go and dances with the Yamuna. When Mahaprabhu is bathing in the Ganga, the waves are coming to caress his body, so he caressed the Ganga in return, in loving reciprocation with Ganga Mai's desire to embrace him. So he's swimming and moving in the waves to reciprocate with the loving ambition of Ganga. So the Lord is the Lord of sweetness. Rupa Madhuryam, Leela Madhurya, Vena Madhurya, Prema Madhurya. This is Krishna, the sweet Lord, our sweet Lord, my sweet Lord. We are worshippers of sweetness. We are tasters. Rasika means tasters of what? Are we after bitter melon? We worship Bhagavan bitter melon? We're worshipping Bhagavan as Kerala? Bhagavan Kerala? The Kerala avatar? We're worshipping the Rasgulla, the Lord who eats Rasgullas. Do you ever see Krishna in any paintings of Krishna chewing on Kerala? Krishna's always chewing on Rasgullas, Ladus, Murphy. It's very interesting. I was listening to Prabhupada's Krishna book narration this morning, and he was speaking about the Govardhan Leela, and he was saying that the Nanda Maharaj had collected all kinds of milk and yogurt and butter and ghee and grains to offer in the yajna to appease Indra for the receiving of the blessings of rain. And Krishna induced him to use all of these substances to make a big feast for Giri Govardhan. And then Prabhupada said that the Brijbasis made all kinds of milk preparations. First he said they made rice and they made dal, and they made halava, and they made all kinds of milk preparations, like rubbery. He said rubbery, sweet rice, sandesh, and rasgullas. It's interesting Prabhupada listed these particular milk preparations because these are the most favorite milk preparations of every Bengali. Not rubbery, but rasgulla, sandesh, and sweet rice. And because Prabhupada is so much a Brijvasi, he threw rubbery in there also. Now, if you read the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, where the Sanskrit is describing the preparations, you don't find rubbery mentioned there, nor sandesh. I made note of that because every year when the Anakut festival comes and different devotees say, oh, what can we cook for Giriraj, this, that, the other thing. So he said, puris? Oh yeah, that's, now, he said they made rice and dal and halava and pakori. He said like this, pakori and puri and many milk preparations like kheer and rubbery and rasgulla and sandesh. These are all the preparations that Prabhupada mentioned in the Krishna book. So I said, well, that's good, that's enough. Sounds like a good feast. A big mountain of halava for the Anakut. Huge mountain of halava with little boulders of pakoris all around, these boulders. And then you make a little cutouts in the hollow of a hill and put a little aluminum foil in there, and you put some little lakes of sweet rice over there, and you make a Radhakund and Shyamakund with some blue, water or whatever. Spirulina put in water or something. You get some water, some Ganga water, and make spirulina in it and make it green, and then you make a little Pavan Sarovar, a little Manasi Ganga. I've seen that people do. They make this, go around the hill, they put animals on. You ever seen? They make a big thing. I remember once in Gopal Mandir, I lived there for 10 years, and we had 10 Anukut festivals there. So we had Giridhari Gopal Anukut Mahotsav. So we made this big hill of halava and all the pakoris and some of these things and Radhakund, Shyamakund. And then we got the carpenter to make a little table. And then on the top of the hill of the Govardhan, there was some boxes and things underneath it and paper, whatever, and the halava was packed on. It wasn't solid halava, there was some infrastructure. Some one layer and a few layers, to make it go high, as halava would just flop off. So then finally, in the very pinnacle of this mountain of halava, makeshift mountain of halava, with this little tiny, like this kind of thing, a little small, 2 inches, 1.5 inch, that sat there. And then we put Gopal there from the altar. Gopal was there. And he's holding like this, his hand, a ladu. Well, he was just sitting there on top of the hill. Then over his hand where he had the ladu, we made a little table. We covered it all with greens and everything. And on that table, I set my Govardhan Shila. So it looked like Gopal was lifting Govardhan Hill. Because Gopal was going like this. Gopal's, he has one hand like this, and he's going like this, or whatever, something like this, you see. And then we put a table there, and it looked like he was lifting my Govardhan Shila. And then we took pictures. I don't know where they are, but so this is our Giridhari Gopal Anukut Utsav. Not sure exactly what that has to do with nectar devotion, but that's Govardhan Mahotsav. Well, yeah, we're talking about heart, softness of the heart. Now, bhakti is soft and Krishna is sweet, and that if you engage in the dhyana by rug, you can make your heart. So therefore, Jiva Goswami gives the conclusion. What is bhakti? Bhakti's nature is extremely tender because it consists solely of thinking of Krishna's sweet form, sweet quality, and sweet pastimes. So that's why I said, we are worshipping sweetness. We are worshipping the sweetness within Bhagavan. We're worshipping his sweet form, his sweet name, Madhura, Madhura, Madhura Nam, and his sweet pastimes. The conclusion is, what's the conclusion? That bhakti should be performed with the desire to make the heart melt in relation to the Lord. This is actually one of the characteristics of Bhava Bhakti. Samrishna, I think it means, melting of the heart. That the level of bhava bhakti, one's heart becomes very soft and melted. So this is why we're performing sadhana bhakti, vaidhi sadhana, with desire to make the heart melt in relation to Krishna. The distinguished Prahlad, Bhakta Prahlad, is stated with emphasis. And he says in 7, 9, 49, and 50, he's just saying that no one can actually attain devotion to you unless they actually worship you, engage in the limbs of devotion. That's what these prayers are saying. Offering prayers and like that. And he lists the activities of devotion. Without rendering 6 kinds of devotional service to you, what are those 6 kinds of services? Offering obeisances to you, this is 7950. Offering obeisances to you, prayers to you, menial service, deity worship, remembering your pastimes and hearing about your glories. Who can achieve devotion to you? So these 6 items are the most, are very important aspects. So we'll continue there tomorrow, text 250. And so much, he's closing this chapter, lots of emphasis on bhakti, and glorifying bhakti, and establishing that bhakti alone is sufficient, and that jnana and vairagya are simply supplementary or supportive elements of bhakti.